Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the only tropical fish podcast that is hosted live on the air. Join the passionate tropical fish keeper, Aqua Alex Cardinelli, for a fun and educational tropical fish episode. This is the Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast, where freshwater and saltwater fish and aquariums are discussed. Aqua Alex has over 12 years of fish keeping experience and over 3 years of podcasting experience. He will show you his passion for tropical fish with this episode. You can call in live at 516-418-5674 to chat tropical fish and join the chat. Now, let's chat fish. Here's Aqua Alex live from his fish room next to his 125-gallon aquarium in West Palm Beach, Florida. Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast is now live.
Hello, tropical fish keepers, and welcome to Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. I'm your host, Aqua Alex Cardinelli. I hope you guys are doing great and enjoying the aquarium hobby. I hope you're having a wonderful weekend. I'm having a great weekend so far. I got some new fish this week. Today I picked up some new free fish as I got 4 dojo loaches for free today. So that's pretty cool. And I also got some new fish from Malone's Monsters. This week I got 3 panda waru, which are pretty rare waru cichlids, so that's pretty awesome as well. Welcome to episode number 495 as we continue on the road to our historic 500th episode. Today we're doing the 3rd installment of the Catfish Cave here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Now, my previous 2 episodes, I've talked about tiger shovelnose and lima shovelnose catfish. And on my last episode of the Catfish Cave, I talked about various species of pimelotus catfish. To listen to those shows, just go to blogtalkradio.com/AquaAlexAquariums or search for Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast on Google and listen to us on any of our podcast platforms. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcast, iHeartRadio Podcast, and more. So if you haven't heard our show on tiger shovelnose and lima shovelnose and pimelotus species, go check them out by going to blogtalkradio.com/AquaAlexAquariums or do a simple search for Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Now, it goes without saying that I am a fan of all catfish, big and small. Did you know that there are catfish that stay under 4 inches? Mini catfish, you say? Yes. Corydoras catfish are perfect for community aquariums and smaller aquariums. Most Corydoras catfish do not exceed 3 to 4 inches. This makes them perfect for home aquariums. Corydoras catfish come from South America, and they have hundreds of species in the genus Corydoras. I love Corydoras catfish, and even thinking about setting up a community aquarium with them and a small school of tetras. So obviously, today I'm going to be talking about Corydoras catfish. Today's episode features a very special guest. Lynn Masney was a great Corydoras breeder and keeper who had a fountain of knowledge when it came to everything and anything Corydoras. Sadly, Lynn passed away a few years ago, but I'm going to play one of her interviews that I did with her from several years ago. But it has a lot of information on Corydoras catfish, and I think it'll be beneficial for you, the listeners, and I think you'll enjoy our interview. Lynn was a great friend of mine, and I miss her very much. I wish she was still with us today so I could have her on my 500th episode. We became personal friends the day I had her on my podcast for the first time. She was a very personable lady, and you could tell she had passion and love for Corydoras. Anytime I see Corydoras online, on pictures, on Facebook, or I see him at the fish store, I think of her. So before we get started, I'd like to honor the memory of Lynn Maffney and ask that we take a moment of silence for Lynn. All right, thank you for taking a moment of silence. I really appreciate that. We're going to begin the show by chatting about Corydoras catfish. I'm going to tell you a little bit of information on Corydoras catfish, then I'm going to hand the rest of the show over to Lynn Maffney from an interview in 2013. Now, this genus of South American catfish includes more than 160 species, with several hundred more that are waiting to be classified, ranging from 1 to 3 inches long in the aquarium hobby. They're named after the bony plates of armor on their body. For protection against predators, these little catfish also have sharp spines in their fins that can sometimes produce a mild venom when stressed. In other words, don't try to catch them with your bare hands. Depending on the species, most Corydoras catfish enjoy temperatures between 72 and 82 degrees Fahrenheit. For example, peppered Cory catfish and July Cory catfish are found on the cooler end of the spectrum, whereas Sturvi Cory catfish can live in higher temperatures. They also prefer pH levels ranging from 6.5 to 7.8. In the wild, Corydoras have been observed in large groups, numbering from 20 to hundreds of the same species. They are most active in the daytime, with peak activity occurring at dawn and dusk. My favorite Corydoras species are Brochus, or giant hognose Corydoras. Brochus is a small subspecies of Corydoras, very beautiful. They get to be about 4 to 5 inches. I had 3 of them at one point several years ago, and I plan on getting some when I start a community aquarium. Panda Corys are a favorite of mine. I love the coloration of them. July Corydoras, are one of my personal favorites as well. And you got to love the Sturbi Corydoras. They're very beautiful. Things to know about Corydoras catfish. They are small catfish, perfect for small to medium to even large aquariums. So a group of Corys can live in a 20-gallon tank, 29-gallon aquarium, 40-gallon breeder, 55, 75, 90, etc. They are a schooling catfish. They are one of a species of catfish that can be kept together without any problems. They like the company of their own. So it's really, really encouraged and really recommended that you keep Corydoras catfish with other Corydoras catfish. They will not do well alone. They are a schooling catfish and must be kept with other Corydoras species. Most Corydoras are tank raised nowadays, but it is a real treat to own wild-caught Corydoras should you get your hands on them. They have more color and are personable. However, all Corydoras are very hardy, so you should not have a problem keeping Corydoras. One of the best things about Corydoras is they can be kept by anyone, a beginner in the aquarium hobby or an experienced seasoned hobbyist will have no problem keeping Corydoras catfish. They are perfect for community aquariums. Corydoras are peaceful, so they are fine for just about any aquarium. Obviously, you would not want to put them in a tank with Oscars or aggressive fish because they will be eaten. Corydoras cats are easy to breed. They're one of the easiest catfish that you can breed. I personally haven't bred them, but I know a lot of people who have bred them, and I've gotten information on how to breed them from my good friend, Lynn Maffney. Now, Corydoras catfish, just like other cats, will eat just about anything. They are not picky eaters by any means of the imagination, so you can feed them flake foods, pellet foods, bloodworms, flying shrimp, and krill. Tank mates for corridors can be tetras, danios, mollies, platies, guppies, and other live bearers. Small dwarf cichlids like epistogrammas, German blue rams, angelfish, and stirbite corys are corys that can live with discus. So that's just some of the information that I wanted to share with you on Corydoras. Now, I'm going to hand the show over to the late, great Corydoras breeder, Lynn Masney. Now, keep in mind that this interview was really old, so the sound quality is not the best, but there's a lot of great information from this interview. This interview took place in 2013 on the aquatic wetline and is full of information, and I think you will enjoy it. With our 500th episode coming up, I thought it would be perfect to honor Lynn Masney with a special episode. So let's hear Lynn Masney talk about Corydoras right here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast on our third installment of the Catfish Cave. Tonight.
Hi, Alex. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm so glad to have you on the show tonight.
Oh, that's great. I feel good to be here.
Awesome. So, would you mind telling the audience a little bit about yourself?
Well, I started with fish when I was 5 years old, but I got into corys being at a girlfriend's house about 6 years ago, and I just happened to be in the house and a bunch of corys spawned. So I got a chance to watch them, and I was intrigued, and that did it for me. So I dug up a bunch of corys, and I had no supervision. I didn't know anybody that bred corys, and I sat on the bucket with a Budweiser and a cigarette and started watching. And that's when I learned all my behaviors and how to breed them, basically. And read up on them online, of course. That should be a first for anybody getting into corys, is to study where they're from and their habitat and the such.
Awesome. That's a great way to learn how to keep fish. That's one of the things I like to do, is to sit there and watch the fish breed and learn from that way.
Yeah, well, I tried back and forth. I did get a few tips from some older cory breeders who've long since stopped, but they were a lot of big help in getting mine going.
Awesome. Okay, so let's begin the show by talking about raising corys. What would be your advice for someone who wants to start keeping Corydoras catfish?
Now, the first thing I would suggest when you're looking into buying corys is look at your species. Look them up. Find out where they're from. Corys come from high altitude and low altitude, and a lot of times that'll make a difference on your temperature of your tank. I've had a lot of angel and discus breeders want them, but a lot of them cannot handle the 80 plus degrees. So there's certain species that you'd want to get for keeping fish in such a situation. So that would be my first thing to say, is look them up, look where they're from, and get their basic habitat down.
That's well said. The first thing I always suggest to anyone who wants to learn about any kind of species is research, and with corys, research is key here too, right?
Yes. Well, researching, I mostly did mine online and looked at the different fish and their habitat, where they're from. And like I said, basically your higher altitude corys like cooler water, and your low altitude corys can handle hotter water. So you kind of got to look at where your fish are from. So that'll make a difference. They also come from an area of Central and South America, basically. There's some that are caught, I believe, over in Germany and areas like that. But for the most part, we'll be talking about fish that we pretty much get here, that we have access to here, because I've looked up a bunch of corys like that, and they don't even have them over here. So basically, we'll talk about the ones that you can get here readily, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I understand where you're coming from with that. So what are some of the core species that are readily available here in the United States?
Well, you're running along with stuff like sturbeyes, pandas. When you go into your local store, the most you'll see the most of is your pandas. You'll see albino, and you'll also see peppered cats, and you'll also see bronze quarries. Those are the big ones that are sold through the big distributors. So when you start getting off on something else, you're getting on something else that not everybody's got, which is what I did. When I first started getting into it, I looked to see what everybody else has got and then picked up the ones that everybody else doesn't have. So basically, I've put myself in the green money-wise because I'm selling fish that are worth a little bit more, which makes a big difference if you're actually in the hobby to make any money. So where they come from is Central and South America, pretty much. So they're used to more of a pH in the 60s. So that's something to contemplate if you're going to breed, because they'll live in 70s and, well, 75, 7.5, and they'll live in that water. They won't necessarily spawn in that. But if you just want to keep them in your tank and enjoy them, I would stick to somewhere in the pH in your 70s, because that's a normal pH for a lot of your fish. And down in South and Central America, they also have seasons. They're a seasonal spawner. So basically, you'll see a lot more action in your quarries come winter, which is their spawning season down in South and Central America. So you'll see a lot of action with them swimming back and forth in groups, and they dance, and they call that pre-spawning behavior. But it's fun to watch, and they like to be in groups. You know, so buying one or two quarries, if you have a small tank, is all right, but they generally like to be in bigger groups. My spawning groups, I've got 11 in one and 12 in the other, and it makes for a much better group. They just like hanging out together. And in Central and South America, when they collect, they'll pick up fish that are different breeds all in one collection. So they mingle, and so you can have species in your tank. They're not all the same species. If you'd like to have some different colors, like I've got orange lasers, which basically are CW10 gold lasers. Now, why gold lasers have an orange stripe is beyond me, but that's the way they named them. And I've also got a C121, which is a new fish on the market. So we'll be seeing some of those starting to filter in through my sales. But basically, you're going to run into those four will be the ones you'll see the most. Now, you'll see sturbeyes quite a bit in the United States. Now, a sturbeye is a fish that you can put in with your discus and angelfish. They will tolerate the 82 to 84 degree temperature a lot better. So you've got it, like I said, temperature and everything. There's so many species of quarries that it's not hard to dig around and find somewhere that's got something different if you want something different. But that's the main thing, is to look at where they were collected from, the species that you've got, and try and duplicate that in your tank. But they're very versatile. They'll still, like, they like soft water where they're from, but my water here is a little on the hard side, and they don't seem to care. I'm still getting them to breed, so that's a good thing.
Well said. I know you touched based on one important thing with Corydoras catfish that like to school, and I love the fact that the Corydoras are one of the catfish at school, and I love schooling catfish, so that's one reason why I enjoy Cory so much.
And like I said, you can put more than one species in, and they'll still all school together. So a lot of people like to do that. Pick up a couple of this one, a couple of that one, maybe one or two of this breed. And there are some certain breeds, like the Aeneas group, that will crossbreed. Like if you put an albino quarry in the same tank as a bronze, they will crossbreed. They all won't do that, but some will, if they're in the same subspecies.
That's pretty interesting, you know.
Yeah, like my Aeneas, my orange lasers are in the Aeneas family, and I've heard that they will crossbreed with a albino Aeneas or the bronze. I don't keep them with them. I've got a separate spawning tank for each of my breeds to keep them all separate, because I'm also dealing with wild fish, which is a whole nother subject, because tank-raised fish are more tolerant of everything than a wild fish. The wild fish, you've got to stick to your pHs and stick a lot closer to their habitat from where they're from.
That's a very key point there. I actually enjoy the wild cod quarries a lot more than the tank-raised quarries. I think the wilds have more color.
Yeah, they do, because when you get them crossbred, you know, these people that are breeding them, the distributors, you know, they'll have a whole load of quarries all the same breed, and they tend to fade out some of the color, I think. But, like, my quarries, being from my orange lasers, are from Peru, and I got them when they were about 3 months out of Peru, and that was, like, last August. And they only spawned for me twice last winter. And I haven't got them to spawn since. But now I've had them in a tank for a year. And just this month, I've gotten 3 spawns out of them. So they may be easing into being in a tank and living tank life. And I'm hoping to get more spawns out of them. So breeding wild fish is a little bit trickier than breeding your tank-raised fish.
Well,
they're
said,
also a little more skittish. They're a little more skittish to the traffic around the tank, and they'll hide a lot. But I took my 2 tanks with the spawners in it, and I didn't give them anywhere to hide. So when I come in the room, they're forced to see me. And when I sit on my bucket in front of the tank, they'll come out. And I've gotten them to the place now where they will eat their own eggs. So if I see them laying on the glass, then I'll collect my eggs immediately. And they're used to me sticking my hand in the tank and picking up eggs, and now they'll spawn right around me. So it's basically, you know, what they're used to, and teaching them, just like a puppy.
That's very cool. That's a very nice story to share with us about quarry breeding. So anyways, what would you say is the minimum tank size for quarries, considering that they need to be kept in schools?
Pardon? I'm sorry.
That's okay. What would you say is the minimum tank size for them, considering that quarry calves need to be kept in school? So what would be your minimum tank size to keep quarries in?
Well, you could put them in a 5. You can keep a couple quarries in a 5. I would say like 3 quarries in a 5-gallon. And I have a small trailer that I live in, a small mobile home, so I'm really limited on size. And I also give presentations on breeding and keeping quarries and with the minimum space that you've got. And right now I'm running 4 tanks for each species. And my 4 tanks consist of 3 10-gallons and 1 5-gallon for the eggs. So I'm basically running right now, I've got about 100 baby quarries in 1 10-gallon tank. But the trend these days is I'm selling them as babies, which I can sell them a whole lot cheaper. And people are picking up on them right and left. So I've got a list of 36 people that want my babies as soon as they're big enough to sell. So your tank size, I've got, like I said, 11 or 12, and they're all in a 10-gallon tank. But I have no other fish in there with them. So they're the only ones in there. So I can't put any more than that pretty much in those tanks. Now you run something like a 125 or a 75-gallon even, you can put yourself a school of 10 or 12, and they'll stay together and they'll run across the glass together and dance, and they're really fun to watch. Always digging.
That's That's true. Corydoras have an awesome personality for a catfish. I love keeping corys in any of my aquariums.
Yeah, they and I was watching today. I saw at my girlfriend's house, one of the corys is buddied up with one of the angels. So they were following each other back and forth across the glass. So you never know who they're going to buddy up with next.
It would be cool for a corydoras to partner up with a loach of some sort.
Well, my girlfriend has got a tank that's got six corydoras of green Aeneas, and she's got angels, and she's got a bunch of loaches in there. And they do run together. She's into her loaches. She's got botias and yo-yos and all different. She's a loach person. And they're all in there together, and they're doing just fine. They don't attack each other. They just kind of mingle. But when they start running back and forth across the glass, then that's kind of fun to watch. They're very busy little critters.
That's cool.
And the younger they are, the busier they are. I call them my little zoomers when they're first hatched. Because they're steady zooming around the tank.
Nice. So, what should people feed their corydoras or their cory cats? What do you suggest for a good diet for cory catfish?
Okay, a diet for a cory. Some people believe that corys should be there to pick up all the waste. Well, that you're really shorting your corydoras by letting them eat leftover flake and stuff like that. They're omnivores, so they like plant and they like meat. So like my corys, they get a very varied diet. In the morning, they'll get high-octane pellets. Like I'm spawning them, so I condition them. So they get a 54% pellet, which is a lot of protein. 54% protein in that, and then I also feed them, being they're wild, I give them live food occasionally. So I'll give them live blackworms. They also like bloodworms. They'll eat tube effects, and of course I throw in a little bit of flake here and there, and then at night they all get frozen brine shrimp. I don't have a big enough area to raise my own brine shrimp, so I just buy the frozen, and they like it just fine. So you can pretty much vary their diet, and I believe they'll get in on the cucumbers and stuff you would throw in for plecos. They'll get into a little bit of everything if you throw it in there.
Awesome.
And when, of course, when they're babies, of course, when they're young, you've got to feed them something different because of the size, which we can get into that when we start getting into the breeding. And unless you want to talk about harboring the baby fish.
We can talk about that next weekend here on the Aquatic Wildlife.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We can get into the babies and all next week when we start getting into the breeding.
So basically, corys are not picky eaters, right?
Not really. They're not finicky at all. They'll even come up and dance for food. Once they get used to you, like I said, mine are pretty used to me now. So they'll come right up and front. I like to put their food right across the front, and they'll come up there and eat. And so I get to watch them eat. And the live worms, they'll fight over the live worms like a piece of spaghetti. One fish on each end till they get to the middle. So it's kind of interesting to watch them eat because they steady dig. Now, they've also, one thing that has come up amongst cory people is the substrate. Corys, where they're from, have a sand bottom. Everybody thinks you should use sand. Well, you should, but with me, what will happen is if you use a rough gravel in your tank, it'll ruin their barbels. They'll scratch it on the rough surface, and you'll end up with a bunch of fish that don't have any barbels, which they need those to help track down their food. And what I've got is small, round gravel that I bought at Walmart. And the biggest reason I use gravel is when I'm collecting eggs, the eggs will fall into the gravel, the ones I miss, and they have a chance of not getting eaten, and they'll hatch in the gravel, and I can collect them later. So basically that's your substrate of choice would be sand, but they'll live in the gravel, but just don't make it sharp. Don't give them anything sharp to hurt their poor little whiskers.
That's some great advice there. Now, can they do bare bottom? Would they be all right in bare bottom?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can put them in a bare bottom tank, but I don't like cleaning a bare bottom tank. That's the big thing. I can go in with a vacuum, which is a tube that has a bigger tube on the end and a smaller tube on the other side, and you vacuum your gravel. It'll pick up the debris, and it'll drop the gravel. So I just go through, and I vacuum the gravel to get any of the leftover food and fish poop, and which I call fish schmeg, clean up your debris, and it'll leave the gravel. But that's the biggest reason I use gravel, is basically for the babies, you know, to hide the eggs and all if they should drop. But the fish dig in it just like they would sand. So I haven't had any problems with mine, and I've been breeding mine for 6 years.
Oh.
But that's something to watch for, is your substrate, most definitely. And a lot of people will use a planted tank for their quarries. And I started off using plants, but they would lay eggs on the leaves, and when I went to collect them, I'd either have to put the whole plant in my 5 gallon, or what I've been doing is collecting the eggs by hand and putting them in the smaller tank. But they were tearing up my plants. So I've turned around now, they've got all plastic plants, which for me works just fine. And I've got their tank set up like a community tank, where it's visually nice, and you don't have to worry about cleaning the bare bottom to make sure it's so spotless that it looks good. And they'll definitely clean the gravel. They do a lot of their own cleaning on the gravel also.
That's pretty cool that they do that. So the next question I have for you is, what would you suggest for take mates for quarry cats?
Quarry cats are pretty easy to get along with. I would not suggest anything like big cichlids. I had a Oscar at one point, and I put a couple of quarries in there, thinking with the spines, I saw the Oscar pick it up head first and spit it back out. So I thought I was good and clear that I could keep quarries with an Oscar. Well, then the Oscar figured out to sneak up behind him, and he literally bit the quarry in half, leaving the head and the spines. So I don't keep them with cichlids. But they will get along. Like, an angelfish is a cichlid, but they'll still get along with angelfish. Like I said, if you pick a quarry, that'll take a higher temperature, because angelfish like a higher temperature. They'll take more in the 82 to 84, and you really don't want high altitude quarries in that. They don't do as well. Sometimes they'll just die, which makes it a problem. And another thing, when you go to the store and you buy quarries, sometimes you'll get your quarries home and find they've all died. Well, Corydoras is one fish, and I don't know of any others, but I'm sure there is. When they're stressed out, they will emit a little bit of toxin out from under their gill plate. And so if you put a bunch of stressed out quarries in a bag, they'll release that toxin, and they could be dead by the time you get them home, and you won't know why. Now, if you look along the top of the bag where the water line is, if you see little bubbles along the top line, the chances are they just killed themselves with toxin. So a lot of suggestions I've heard from people is to let the fish store people chase them around. They'll chase them around the big tank. They'll emit that toxin, which will dissipate into the big tank. And when you put them in the bag, you're not going to have that problem of worrying about getting them home. Now, that doesn't always happen. Some people have no trouble at all. But if your fish should die by the time you get them home, that could be part of the problem. And I learned that from a man named Ian Fuller, who is a quarry man who has been doing nothing but quarries for 40 years. And that's where I learned that little bit of information was from Ian.
Well said, we were just about to talk about that in a minute or two, so that's a very, very good information I think our listeners should know about, that quarries do produce toxins that can kill them.
Yeah, it'll affect other fish in the bag also. If you decide to put quarries in bags with tetras, they get along well with all your tetras and rasboras, and the only thing you'll have to watch for is fin nippers. Now, if you end up with fish that are fin nippers, like I think barbs might be in that bracket, fish that are bad at nipping fins, they'll nip your quarry's fins. And if you also, there's a type of an algae eater you need to watch for, too. I can't remember the Latin name, but they will attach themselves to the side of a quarry and bite through him, because quarries have no scales. They have skin instead of scales. So when you're treating a tank for anything else, if you have ick or your fish end up with something else, and you got to treat a tank that's got quarries in it, it's a wise thing to do to give your medication in a half dose, because they'll absorb it a lot quicker not having scales.
Well said. I agree with you on that as well. You can also use kosher salt, correct? Or is kosher salt dangerous for them?
Pardon? I didn't get that.
Oh, I'm sorry. You can also use kosher salt and some warmer water to help them. Is that too dangerous for them? That's what I use for my other fish.
Well, like I said, the warmer you do the water, the worse it is for them. But 80 degrees would be all right. You start hitting 84, and you're getting a little too warm for them. And that's a problem, because when people treat for ick, they run the temperature up to like 84 to 86. So you're playing an iffy game treating like that for an angelfish or something else where you need to raise your heat. And I know a lot of people that pull their quarries if they've got to do that. Quarries aren't, for some reason, I have had no problem with it, and I see a lot of people that end up with ick in the tank, but it hasn't affected the quarries. I'm not saying they won't get it, but I've seen them avoid it a lot easier than other fish.
Yeah, they are very strong fish. I know that for a fact, and I never had ick with my quarries to date.
Yeah, you end up with other fish that end up with the ick, especially if you're bringing them home from a fish store, where a lot of people suggest having a quarantine tank for anything you buy in the fish store. But if you've got yourself a reputable fish dealer, like my quarries, you know, the lasers, they're a little bit harder to find. And the only thing about that is if you buy from a breeder, you have less chance of having that happen. Because a breeder, they pretty much take better care of all their fish. So if you have a good breeder, sometimes it may cost a little more, but it's worth it to get a healthy fish.
Well said. So, Lynn, what would be your favorite quarry species?
I would say it's my orange lasers. I love the color. They've got an orange, neon orange stripe down them, and their body is gold, and they've got a pink blush on their gill plate. And I like the green lasers, but I think I like the orange ones better. They're gold lasers technically, but everybody calls them oranges because of the orange stripes. And it's like a bright neon. They've got a lot of color to them, and I like color. There's so many black and white quarries that I decided I didn't want to breed another black and white quarry. And I've got buyers for them, so that's the good thing. Because I pretty much raise them to sell.
Those lither quarries are very beautiful. I know that. I have very rarely see them up here and where I'm from. So when they are up here, they're very expensive.
Oh, yeah. I had one guy tell me he saw him in one of his fish stores for $24.95 a fish.
Wow.
Now, I'm selling my babies, say, 3/4 of an inch, 1/2 to 3/4 of an inch. When they're big enough and they're hardy enough to ship, I'll sell them for $3 a piece.
That's not bad. That's a great price.
Yeah, that's a good price. But I can get by on that. Whereas juveniles, if they get bigger, say an inch or so, I'll sell them for $6. Because mine are always gone before they get that size. So that seems to be the trend these days, that people are buying all my babies and putting them in a separate tank and growing them out to their size. You know, to the size they want to put them in their tank at.
Nice. You offered them at a steal of a price, actually. It's an awesome price.
Yeah. So I've got all mine sold, you know, just keeping them alive, and I'm good to go.
That's the best thing to do is keep them alive.
Yeah. And with the wild caughts, I had an accident that I tried to hatch my eggs out in 7-point water, thinking they would acclimate to that automatically, where when I sell them, they'll go to somebody's tank and the 7.0 and that'll be all right. Well, it didn't work. It killed off everything that hatched. So,
oh, that sucks.
Yeah, that really kind of sucked. But I learned my lesson. But once they leave here, they'll be able to live in 7.0 tanks.
Nice. So my favorite quarry is the brochure species. Have you ever worked with the brochure species?
No, I haven't. What color are they?
These are actually brown. They're actually a wild-caught species, so most of the brochures you get in your fish store are all wild-caught. These are one of the first few quarries that are have not been tank-raised yet.
Oh, really? Well, I looked
yeah.
into my other ones, the C-121s. Now, those are a new species that are undetermined or undescribed yet. They haven't been dissected or taken apart or they haven't been collected enough, I guess, to give them a name yet. And I went to a big import-export warehouse down here, and I was looking for a Dolphys. I thought I'd go with the Dolphys. They're a white fish with a black stripe across their eyes, a black band that runs down their top line, and another black band right behind their shoulders, and they've got bright orange in between those two bands. So I was out after Adolphi's. Well, I bought the Adolphi's from this place, and they come from Brazil, and they had only been out of Brazil for maybe a month and a half. And I ended up buying, some of them had spots on the side, big blush spots, which I didn't think anything of it until I posted them on Corey Doris Land, which Ian Fuller is part of, and everybody let me know that I had a different species. They were not Adolphi's at all. They just happened to be running with the Adolphi's and got collected with the Adolphi's. So I'm going to wait till they come in season again and pick up some more C-121s to add to what I've got. But
nice.
That's another interesting one that's going to be new to the market.
Nice. So, do you have anything you want to close today's show with?
Pardon?
Do you have anything you want to close today's show with? Anything you want to add to close the show out with?
Well, I suggest if you're into getting something different than what you got at your pet shop, look them up. See where they're collected from and what kind of environment they're from. You'll have your best results by doing that. And
awesome.
You'll be a lot happier with them because they'll be happier.
Awesome. All right, so Lynn, I'd like to say thank you for coming on the show tonight. I had lots of fun learning about quarry catfish. And if you listeners have any further questions, contact Lynn Matheny with your questions on Facebook.
Yes,
thank you for coming on the show tonight, Lynn. Go ahead. I didn't hear you.
Just PM me or I belong to quite a few different groups, but if you just PM me, I'm glad to answer any questions or help you out.
Awesome. I had a fun show today. Thank you for coming on. And
okay, thank
awesome
you very
stories.
Much, Alex, and I hope I helped everybody a little bit.
Yes, you
did. That was the late, great Lynn Masney, who sadly passed away a couple of years ago, but I had the honor and the privilege of interviewing Lynn Masney, who bred Corridoris and loved Corridoris multiple times. So in the future here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast, I'll play some more of her wonderful interviews. And I apologize for all the background noise in that interview. The interview took place several years ago, and I was new to podcasting back then, and I did my podcast in a room with other people. So I apologize for that. But right now, we're going to go ahead and take a commercial break, and when we come back, we'll finish the show.
Hey guys, my name is Claude Mooney, and I am a social media influencer and a current author. Not only do I make fun YouTube content, but I also just published a book called The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter. It is a mystery book where it's about a young man who moves from his home country to the United States to get assimilated to the hearing wars, but unluckily he encounters an interpreter and he grew later to like, but then is later found missing and goes dead under mystery circumstances. Check out the book at store.bookbaby.com and search up The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter, or you can go on Google and search up The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter and you can find a link there. Or you can find the hard copy version. Also, check out my YouTube channel in the link of my bio in @Paul_Aramunis, which is called Paul Aramuni Vlogs. Thanks, and I hope to see you guys along this journey with me.
Would you like your very own hardcover copy of The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter by Paul Aramuni? Well, enter The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter 500th episode giveaway contest now to win your very own hardcover copy. My good friend and author of this book, Paul Aramuni, is giving away one free hardcover copy book signed by himself, the author, and he's going to announce the winner live on the 500th episode. To enter the book giveaway, please email me, alexgoyankeescardelli19@gmail.com, with your name and address, so in case you win, we can send the book your way. That's all you have to do. Also, make sure to subscribe to Paul Aramuni Vlogs on YouTube and follow Paul Aramuni on Instagram. About The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter. The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter is an intriguing fictional story with some elements of a real-life experience. A young man who is hard of hearing moves from his home country to live in a state in the United States. He wishes to get assimilated to the hearing world, but needs an interpreter to enable him to communicate efficiently to others and understand what is being taught in class. His first experience with interpreters was not good, but when he moved to the United States, he met a nice interpreter who he grew to like. Unluckily, this interpreter goes missing and is later found dead under mysterious circumstances. The young man gets another interpreter who turns out to be his worst nightmare. It turns out that this interpreter is involved in an evil cult which offers human beings for sacrifices. A very good book, if I must say so. I read it and enjoyed it. So if you want a hardcover copy signed by the author himself, email me, alexgoyankeescardinelli19@gmail.com, with your name and address and why you want the book, and you can win a copy of this awesome murder mystery book. Paul Aramuni will be live on the 500th episode to announce the winner. Good luck, everybody. Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast 500th Episode Prize Giveaway. Winner receives $50 liveaquaria.com gift certificate. I, Aqua Alex Cardinelli,
am proud to announce my first prize giveaway in years. All fish keepers are welcome to enter. If you have been supporting Aqua Alex Aquatic Wetline and Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast over the last 6.5 years, this is your chance to be rewarded. I am excited to present tropical fish keepers and the listeners of my fish podcast with the chance to get new tropical fish or fish supplies from Live Aquaria. This is a great way for you to celebrate the 500th episode with us. Here's how to enter the Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast 500th episode prize giveaway. Leave a review on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast, either on our Facebook page, the Aquarium Network, or on any of our podcast platforms. Just search on Google, Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Send me up to 3 photos of your favorite fish. Your fish could be used in episodes and or a new logo. Pictures must be owned by you. Email the pictures to alexgoyankeescardinelli19@gmail.com or message me on Facebook, Alex Cardinelli, or the Aquarium Network with them. Also include your name and your email so I can send you the gift certificate in case you win. You must do both steps to be entered. Winner will be announced live on the 500th episode. Entries start today, April 5th, 2020, and end May 13th, 2020. The deadline for entries is May 13th, so submit now. Winner will be chosen by online name generator in order to be fair. Good luck, fish keepers, and I hope to see some gorgeous fish pics and awesome reviews. Saturday, May 30th, 2020 will be very historic for Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast and Aqua Alex. It will be the 500th episode of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. It all started in 2013 with Aquatic Wetline when Aqua Alex took his love and passion of tropical fish and introduced a tropical fish podcast that has lasted over 6 years, featuring many special guests in over 490 episodes. Now, on May 30th, 2020, Aqua Alex will proudly host the 500th episode of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. It will be a night of tropical fish spectacle featuring 5 special guests, 4 of which will be wonderful fish keepers, and the 5th and final guest will be an up-and-coming author. There will be tropical fish profiles and much more. A special start time of 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. This is a can't-miss episode. So join us May 30th at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific for our 500th episode. Confirmed guest, Matt Sibidu, who will be chatting about hermit crabs. For the first time ever, hermit crabs will be discussed on an Aqua Alex podcast. Founder of Little East Aquarium Club, Jeremy Stellhorn, will be on the show. Nature artist and tropical fish expert Sam Garcia Jr., a.k.a. Sam Scales, will be on the show. One special fish keeper will be announced at a later date as the 5th and final special guest. Author of the murder mystery, The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter, Paul Aramani, will discuss his book and announce the winner of The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter book giveaway. The winners of the 500th episode prize giveaway will win a hardcover copy of The Truth of the Unknown Interpreter and a $50 Live Aquarium aquaria.com gift certificate will be announced live on air on the 500th episode. More details to come as we draw near. Like our Facebook page, the Aquarium Network, for more information. See ya on the 500th episode, May 30th, 2020, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific.
All right, that's going to do it for us tonight here on Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and learning about Corydoras catfish today. I hope you learned a lot about Corydoras catfish, and I hope you enjoyed the show. I'll see you on the next episode of the Catfish Cave and the next episode of Aquarium Hobbyist Podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and have a great night, everybody.